and welcome aboard the battleship Pretension. I am Scott Nye.
I am David Bex.
Thank you for listening. David, how are we doing?
I'm very excited, actually, because we're only a few weeks out from the greatest weekend in Los Angeles every year.
We're exactly, as of recording, 3 weeks out, and this is always when the schedule drops, 3 weeks out.
And it always, I think, Comic-Con is always 2 weeks before, and I don't know why I'm in that headspace, and TCM always kind of sneaks up on me, and then, which is like, it's a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, oh yeah. So yeah, the schedule for TCM, the TCM Classic Film Festival has been released, and this is not, we don't do, like we do with some festivals, we don't do a whole, like, preview episode for TCM, but we thought maybe as a top of the show thing, we'd like run through some of the highlights and some of the Sophie's choices and stuff that we have now that the schedule's out. So there are, like, for instance, I mean, there are definitely things that when movies had been announced, there are things that I was like, oh, I want to see that.
But you never know. I don't get too attached until the schedule's out.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of it, I know you have ragged on me for this in the past, but I tend to favor older movies. So some of the 70s stuff that sounded good to me, I'm probably not going to be making it to, because there's older stuff I want to see at the same time.
Sure.
I'm looking for the big along traveling All Stars and Motor Kings is one that's very cool to me.
That's a movie that I've been curious about for a while. And so, for listeners who don't know, it's like a baseball movie starring Billy D. Williams, and Billy D. will be there in person, which is, of course, a big draw. I've just heard mixed things about the film, and so I'm a little unsure. And right. Let me see. I think that's up against something. Oh, well, I've never seen, like, The Sin of Nora Moran, which is playing against it, which is,
I've seen that. I have the Blu-ray. Yeah.
Oh, good movie?
It's really good. Yeah.
It has one of the sexier pre-code posters, which is saying something. Yeah. So I've, you know, naturally long been curious about it. So that'll be a tough decision. One of many tough decisions in this festival, as always.
I think you're going to be disappointed with me for I'm choosing over Go Long Traveling All Stars, which is Sabrina. I've never seen Billy Wilder's Sabrina. I know you're not a Billy Wilder guy. And I also have not gone to a TCM Fest movie in the China. The actual TCL Chinese theater since pre-COVID. I think Hello Dolly was the last time I saw a TCM Fest movie in the Chinese. So I was kind of thinking, I just wanted to get back to that.
I got a couple on the schedule that will get me into the old IMAX screen. Yes, I mean, even amongst Billy Wilder stuff, Sabrina's, you know, aggressively fine. And if there's any Billy Wilder movie that was going to have my devotion, it'd certainly be one with Audrey Hepburn. But Sabrina's all right, you know, and yeah, up against Bingo Long and Sin of Nora Moran, it's easy one to discard that, especially because there's no guests at Sabrina. Having a much harder time. Where was my big conflict? Oh yeah, I think Saturday Night. They got some restored Fleischer Brothers animated shorts, and I love me some Fleischer Brothers, but that's up against Westward the Women, which I've never seen. That's on 35.
Yeah, and I'm planning on seeing Westward the Women, which, based on the Westward the Women, is a 2-hour movie, but they have it for 2.5 hours because they're like, is this the
it's the Robert Osborne?
That is the Robert Osborne. Yeah, so that always goes. Although I've been to those the past couple of years, and those always go kind of long. But I'll be going from Westward the Women to La Strada, and I'm not going to sweat it, because historically foreign films at TCM Fest don't block the room.
No, but nobody cares.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I'm going to see La Strada.
That might actually, your intel might help me make the decision there, because I really want to see Summer Stock at the 9 p.m. slot. And if the Robert Osborne Prize always goes long, then its estimated end time at 8:45 might not be enough to get me there.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year, or either last year or 2 years ago, what was the whichever year I showed Portrait of Jenny, that was one that I was like literally sweat, like booking it from all the way at the American Legion to Cinema 4. So I'm like, I have 10 minutes to get to a movie in Theater 4. And just like, there's sometimes it's just festival magic, and you just, everything works out. And I got it in there for Portrait of Jenny, which remains one of the weirdest movies I've seen at TCM Fest, if not the weirdest.
I know, I'm jealous. I need to hunt that one down, because the way you described it sounded fascinating.
Yeah. So yeah, but the Egyptian's back open. I'm planning on getting to a couple of things in the Egyptian. That's Westward the Women is in the Egyptian, as is Annie Gets Your Gun, which I've never seen.
That's on my list, and it's showing on Nitrate. So hello.
Oh, that's very cool.
Nothing like endangering your life for Annie Get Your Gun.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, minor conflict. It was an easy choice to pick Annie Get Your Gun over Dirty Harry, but I've never seen any of the Dirty Harry movies. And when it showed up, I was like, oh, that might be cool. But it was not to be.
I mean, strictly speaking, you could make it. Dirty Harry is at 9:15, scheduled to get out at 11:15. There's no guest. And then Annie Get Your Gun starts at 11:30.
Yeah,
whether Annie Gets Your Gun will be so packed that you would just be better off favoring that, I can say. And I've seen Dirty Harry. It's fine. You know.
Okay. I'm also very interested in El Cid, but I know, because I like Anthony Mann's like noirs and westerns. I've seen The Fall of the Roman Empire, and it's such a slog, and so I'm worried that El Cid, as cool as it looks, is going to be another boring 3-hour epic.
Yeah, I'm not even that into Anthony Mann, like, even at his most stripped down, so El Cid has never been a big priority for me. What's interesting here to me, looking at the listing, and maybe this is just a mistake, but it's supposed to play in the TCL IMAX on 35mm, which I don't think that theater's even set up for 35mm.
You know what? I noticed that too. Huh.
But yeah, given that that takes the block where I could be seeing Annie Get Your Gun, which is a much bigger priority for me. I will be going with Annie.
I'll see you at Annie Get Your Gun then.
Yeah, and that morning, I've seen it before, but Night Has a Thousand Eyes playing on Nitrate. That's a wonderful film. So if you're looking for something to do on Saturday morning, I would highly recommend that.
Okay, I was thinking about getting some sleep that morning, but
hey, you do you.
Yeah, Night Has a Thousand Eyes was definitely I don't want to go too much into what I'm planning to see, because we'll do a wrap up. But I do feel pretty good about this lineup. I feel like there's some really exciting stuff that I like, some potential blind spots I can cross off. But then on the other hand, some things I'd never heard of, like the Phoenix City story.
A lot of people love it, so don't take my word for it. You should totally see it. I've never really gotten on with Phil Carlson's noirs, and it kind of falls into, I know you've seen some of these kind of movies, but like those kind of like very processy noirs that are like, here's how the Treasury Department worked or whatever. I can't remember which arm of law enforcement looking at, but it's kind of in that vein.
All right. Well, I'm fascinated by those, but they don't tend to be great.
No.
Although I like T-Men, which is, again, an Anthony Mann film.
I can't even.
What did Phil Carlson do? He did Kansas City Confidential. So I like
that. Yeah. Kansas City Confidential.
I feel like I've seen something else from him, too.
I've seen a handful. Looking up his filmography.
Oh, 99 River Street. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw that, too.
Yeah, 99 River Street is good.
Okay, maybe I should watch that one again. I don't know.
Yeah.
The more...
But yeah, it's one of those. I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah. Some of the stuff that will be getting back to the IMAX theater, though, is... God help me, I can't resist seeing Seven, which I haven't seen in so long, and David Fincher's going to be there, so...
All right. I'm losing you. I'm gonna go sans video.
All right.
All right. Well, hopefully that'll work. And yeah, but there's some good stuff. I'm still not planning on going to any midnight movies. I've never gone to a midnight movie at TCM because it just the weekend just takes much out of me already. Yeah, will I be seeing you on Friday night at the Bellboy?
No, I mean, I've seen The Bellboy before, and it's playing against Seven, and I haven't seen Seven in a long time. It's a new restored digital version. David Fincher's going to be there, so I think that's too strong a draw. Even though I do deeply love The Bellboy.
Right. Okay.
I was going to say, I will be trying to make a midnight show. That Heavenly Bodies movie looks too good, and Milly DeCirco will be there, who unfortunately got laid off from TCM last year or the year before. And I'm glad they brought her back to do the midnight shows because she always used to host those. It was always a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, real quick before we go any further, I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. I use them each and every day of my life. I'm literally using them right now, but I also use them today to listen to more than once, and not for the first time today, a new album by a Norwegian band called Madder Mortem, MadderMortem. They've been around a while. I'm so bad at, like, as much as I little listen to metal, I'm so bad at metal like genres. So the Encyclopedia Metallum, which is a great reference online, lists them as a prog metal band. I thought they were power metal, but anyway, their new album, it's about a month old, maybe 2 months. It's called Old Eyes, New Heart, and it's so great. If you like, you know, kind of nerdy metal song about like kings and towers and stuff like that. But a gorgeous female lead vocals. I'm sure she's quite fetching herself. Her vocals are gorgeous. It sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, we're back. Scott, what are we talking about?
Yeah, you were looking for a list of topics the other week. I was looking through a list of movies I'd seen recently and somehow landed on the theme of self-destruction, which is something that's pervasive through all types of cinema, and which, I was joking. When I told Julia the topic of this earlier, she was like, do I need to be worried about something here? And I was like, no. It's just my endless fascination with deeply fucked up characters. And so it was very easy for me to very quickly generate a list of films that fit the topic, and really like of all kind of stratas. I mean, like, obviously you got like your Cassavetes in there. You got all kinds of like gritty foreign films in there, but I was surprised the number of like big commercial films that kind of fit the rubric as well, of just like characters in one way or another kind of seeking to undo themselves. And I think there's just something in it's tempting to maybe say the American psyche, but I would say even just the general mankind innate trait kind of thing of like wanting at any moment just undo every aspect of your life. There's something kind of romantic and thrilling about that. Though most of us have the good sense to not do, not go that far with things. But to see it on screen, you know, is very grabbing and catching. And you see that, like, just in, like, simple genre films even, which we can get into. But I just thought there was enough in there to dig into.
Yeah, let's get into it, shall we? Let's. You mentioned Cassavetes, and yeah, one of the first places I think my mind went was opening night,
which I still haven't seen. It's okay. Been literally on my shelf, if not my list, for years.
But that gives me, like, you know, Tyler and I did, as we talked about just last week, a topic about, like, our pet themes and stuff like that, and, like, I have said before that I am, like, really into or fascinated by movies about drunks. And I realized that there's a lot of overlap, you know, putting together some things here. There's a lot of overlap between not just drunks, but, like, addiction and self-destruction. But then the sort of defining, you know, what's what I'm looking for, epistemological, whatever, question about this topic is, are you differentiating between people like Nicolas Cage and Leaving Las Vegas, who are consciously, willfully self-destructing, and then addicts in other movies like The Lost Weekend or something, where, like, it's happening, like, their addiction is doing it to them against their will in a way?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because obviously addiction came up a lot as I was kind of looking for titles on this topic. And I don't know, maybe it's just like a psychological line or a medical line that I don't entirely understand. But I think in a lot of kind of addiction dramas, you get people trying to intervene, and the protagonist of the film, or whoever they're trying to intervene with, like, abjectly refusing that help.
Right, not okay.
Because I think there are films, yeah, where there are people who are trying to get better and then end up falling off the wagon, or whatever the case may be. But a lot of the times they are abjectly refusing the possibility of getting better. And I think that's kind of where I honed in on an element of self-destruction. And, you know, maybe it's, this is where I just don't know. Maybe the addiction is just so strong that they can't imagine needing help, or maybe there is an element of pride at play, and maybe the drama is in the interplay between the two.
All right. So what are some of the movies that came to mind for you?
Well, I kind of want to start, I guess, with some of the more commercial titles, just because I think it is stranger to see that come to flourish. But a couple of randomly, like, superhero movies even came to mind. I think both Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight and Iron Man 2 play into this realm to different degrees. You know, The Dark Knight is essentially about Batman being so convinced that he is the one to save the day that he ends up kind of failing the city and himself. And Iron Man 2, more specifically, which is still my favorite MCU movie, and I know most people put it pretty low, but precisely because it's the only superhero film I've seen where the enemy really is the hero, and it's about Tony coming with his own addictions, his own pride, and, like, the bad guys are almost secondary to that. And I guess it's not a surprise that that one got more definitively rejected, whereas The Dark Knight kind of toes the line between how far Batman's driving himself and, like, a sense of his own desire to immolate himself in so doing. But both those films coming out in short succession, I thought were still worth noting on.
Yeah, that's a good. I did not think about The Dark Knight, and I've never seen Iron Man 2. Yeah, I don't think the ones that I came up with, I didn't think to go into a lot of mainstream stuff like that. I mean, I guess Fight Club's, like, a big, you know, a big studio release, but I don't know if that's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, Fight Club was not, you know, successful on its initial run, but it obviously gained a very quick cult following to the extent that it's, you know, now considered a big movie. And I think that kind of speaks to the appeal of that sort of narrative of a guy like purposefully destroying his own life. Might not appeal to an opening weekend audience, but might appeal to people who are discovering the film on video or kind of in the weeks to come. But in terms of like genre, like both film noir and my, you know, kind of recent fave genre erotic thrillers, like all of those deal very directly with characters who are like maybe not pointedly destroying their lives, but almost.
Mm-hmm.
So like all the classic noirs, like Double Indemnity, The Setup, The Prowler, Vertigo, if you consider that a noir, I certainly do. The Postman Always Rings Twice. And then like lesser known stuff like Where Danger Lies or Scarlet Street. All those films are really about protagonists who are so caught up in sex and violence and their own like self-fulfillment that they're just completely blind to any kind of effect that could have on themselves and their loved ones, anything else.
Yeah. Is Scarlet Street still lesser known? Or, I mean, I feel like it's...
I guess it's hard for me to say. You know, it feels lesser known to me because I hadn't heard of it until, you know, deep into my cinephilia. But yeah, now it does feel like it's kind of more a little mainstream. Interestingly, so as of the time of recording this, the annual Noir City Film Festival is going on here in Los Angeles at the Egyptian Theater. And Julia, I have been going to a lot of programs. And I think this is something you and Tyler have talked about, but I think it's something Tyler believes, but do you find that noir is kind of like a general inroads for a lot of people to classic film?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my contention as well. Julia wasn't so sure. She was like, well, what about like Casablanca and, you know, historically, not so much these days, but historically Gone with the Wind. And I can see that, but it does feel like for the people who like latch onto classic film as a regular part of their diet and not just an incidental playing the hits kind of thing, it does feel like noir is kind of a big in.
Yeah, and I think the reason is because there's an idea of classic films that they are... Unfortunately, I think a lot of people equate cynicism and pessimism with sophistication.
Sure.
And so I think a lot of, like, especially teenagers tend to think that. So I feel like unfairly or not, the idea people think of movies pre-60s or even pre-70s as being less emotionally or mentally sophisticated, but noir kind of puts light of that because it's so cynical. So weirdly, I think it's the pessimism and cynicism in noir that appeals to you know, teens like I was.
Sure. Yeah. I wonder if that's, I could see that. I could just see it going both ways where it's either still the case or not the case as much anymore. Just as taste change. Cause like it was a very like Gen X elder millennial thing to be like that kind of counterculture against the grain kind of thing. But I don't know how Gen Z kids are getting into classic films, and maybe for all I know, they're loving screwball comedies.
Oh, that would be nice. That would be fun. So there are a lot of films that are films about self-destructive women, but sometimes it feels like, is it self-destruction or is it like society grinding them down, or, you know,
sure.
A couple of lists that I looked at under this topic listed the great Teresa Russell in Bad Timing.
And, oh yeah, I haven't seen that one in a bit, but
yeah, I mean it's a great movie. But a part of it, like, I think when I think of a self-destructive character, I think of someone that you might feel frustrated with. Whereas I think her name is Marina. I just looked this up and I forgot. In Bad Timing, I feel sorry for her, and that's different in a way.
That's interesting that that's your impulse there, is frustration versus like feeling sorry for. I'm curious if I where I tend to fall on that line, because I think generally if the movie's working for me, I'm so caught up in it that I don't have any kind of negative emotion towards the character. I'm just like, this is a fascinating person that I want to spend endless time with.
But I mean, if the movie's working, I mean, frustrated in the way you'd be feel frustrated about a loved one or family member. You know, these are characters that I like, but like to go to another couple of women, Margot Robbie in Babylon, or Elizabeth Moss in Her Smell, are both women that I really like, and also really am like, if you could just, you know, you could be, you'd be okay if you could just like settle down or like walk in a straight line for a few steps, you know.
Man, now I'm feeling just like the sicko meme here, because like in both of those cases, every time they were making one terrible choice after another, I was just like applauding, going, yeah, let's fucking go.
No, I mean, yeah, I get that too, because it's good for the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, anything that's stoking what the movie's doing, and in both cases, like the self-destruction is very of a piece with what the movie's doing, I'm like, more, please, more.
So do you differentiate then between women who are making bad choices and women who have no choices?
I hadn't done so as actively. I guess in either case, it feels, I think for movies about women in particular, I'm looking at, I even made a separate list of like movies in this genre or loose thematic grouping that do feature women, because I was making a list that seemed to be mostly male, and I was glad that I ended up separating them out and found that I had a lot of films with women in them. But I think in either case, it does feel maybe more reactive than like aggressive in the way that the male ones do, where like, I just to pick a random example from the male list I have, like First Reformed is like, his self-destruction is of a piece with his like trying to attack a certain system, and not like pure flailing. There's an element of flailing in there, but it increases the more he has like a target, as it were. But then like a lot of the films I have for women, and the two I thought of right away were The Deep Blue Sea and Anna Karenina, partially because we just talked about The Deep Blue Sea as part of the Terrence Davies episode. But those are very reactive towards, yeah, societal forces. But I wouldn't necessarily say that those societal forces forced those women to be in the position they're in. I just think there's something in them that couldn't take it anymore, kind of thing.
I've never seen Black Swan to this day.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so like... Top of my list just says I started out typing individual Aronofsky films, and that was just like, it's kind of every Aronofsky film.
Yeah.
Because like that's The Wrestler, that's The Whale, that's Requiem for a Dream, The Fountain to a degree, but yeah, definitely Black Swan. And that's an interesting one because you get a real sense of like the kind of environment she was brought up in and how much she was pushed to be a certain kind of person, a certain kind of professional, but the extent to which she goes in doing that does kind of feel motivated in a way from an interior sense. And I think you see that in a lot of Aronofsky's film. That's true of The Wrestler as well, for that matter, that like, yeah, this guy's really put to a corner, but he also seems to like kind of get off on really putting himself in danger.
Yeah, I'm glad I Googled this, because I just found an entire list of 12 movies about women self-destructing.
Okay.
Some of them I haven't seen or would maybe disagree. Thelma and Louise, I'm not sure I agree that that's what's happening there.
Yeah, I totally disagree with that. I think they're trying to save themselves.
Yeah, I've not seen The Lifeguard.
I don't even know that. What is that?
With Kristen Bell, 2013.
Oh, right. I vaguely remember this movie. I didn't know that was about a self-destructive woman, and I do like Kristen Bell.
Yeah. I haven't seen this one in forever, but have you seen Lucky McKee's May from 2002?
No, I've long wanted to, but I've not.
It's so good. Yeah, Black Swan's on here. Oh, Ingrid Goes West. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a very good one. And that's like, I think that even points to why some of these can be very commercially successful, is like that's tapping into an impulse that a lot of people, and you know, not to gender it too much, but definitely a lot of women experience, of being so kind of caught up in a slice of social media that it can take over your life.
Yeah. I think we've talked about doing, or maybe we had a maybe it was a mailbag question we had, like movies that we were wrong about or whatever. Like, I was too hard on Ingrid Goes West when I first saw it. I think because I still don't think the ending is a little too cute or whatever. But the more distance we get from it, the more I realize how fully it nailed its target.
And I remember even because I had some issues with it. I think maybe not as many as you because I came away pretty immediately positive on it. But I appreciated the fact that it wasn't just a target kind of thing. Like it kind of humanized. Mm-hmm. It kind of took like a very generic tropes that you could make just purely the subject of mockery and kind of found some human element in each character.
Okay. See, now this list has two in a row that I think. I want to get your opinion on whether someone with a debilitating mental illness is self-destructing or if it's so they have 2003's Monster and A Woman Under the Influence. Neither of which I would think of as self-destructive people because it's not their fault. Like Matt Damon and Good Will Hunting. It's not their fault.
I haven't seen Monster since it came out and I honestly don't remember necessarily like a mental health component to it, even though it might be fairly obvious to anyone who's seen it recently.
Yeah, I think that's I don't know if it articulates it plainly, but I think that's also the fact that I've seen both of what's his name, Nick Bloomfield's or whatever documentaries about Eileen Wuornos, and she's like,
oh, okay.
And so I guess I'm bringing that to it, that she's clearly like has some like paranoid delusions or something, like anyway.
Even when I was like kind of thinking about Cassavetes, who I mentioned kind of at the top of the show, A Woman Under the Influence was kind of sitting uneasily with me because I don't consider her self-destructive, but I kind of maybe consider Peter Falk to be, where he's like kind of taking himself and her down along the way.
Okay, what else? Marnie, I've never seen
Marnie. That's way too mental health. That's like aggressively.
Oh,
this woman is deeply fucked up.
Here's a good one: Young Adult, Charlize Theron.
Oh yeah, that's for sure.
Really good one.
Yeah. And that's one where she's like almost on a mission about it. Of like, let's see how far I can push this and still come out alive.
That makes me think of something else. But let me finish this list. 1981's Possession. I haven't seen it.
Possession is like almost about like a spiritual condition. And it is like, you'd be hard pressed to say that's about a person in any real way.
I hadn't thought about this one, but it's a great movie. And I agree. Mikhail Haneke's the Piano Teacher with Isabelle Huppert.
Yeah, that's one that I really want to watch again. Cause it just bounced completely off of me, but it's kind of stuck with me in a surprising way.
Okay. And the last one in here, I feel like a little bit of judgment here.
Okay.
Belle du Jour. She's exploring something. I don't know if that's self-destruction.
I think she's open to the fact that it could destroy her life, but that's not why she's pursuing it.
I hadn't thought about the prostitution thing, which I guess, like, would you consider Thieves of E? Would you consider her self-destructive in that movie?
I put that on my list. So I actually like, there were two directors that I was like, these are, well, three, I guess, including Cassavetes, but I was like, these are very much like filmmakers who are consistently interested in the theme of self-destruction. One of them was Godard. And I'll mention the other one so that I get to my Godard thought, but I did have Vive Savi on that list because I don't think it's just about the prostitution of it all. I think she's given enough opportunities to get herself out of that situation specifically and has enough avenues to kind of see another side of life that she's not purely just being put in this hole. I just think that character is a little bit more well-rounded than just like this is the downfall of a woman type story, whereas like there's a ton of like silent dramas that are very much that like look at what society has done to these women kind of films, like Diary of a Lost Girl or Pandora's Box, like those kind of movies. I think Viva Sophie kind of exists somewhere in between those two realms. But Godard obviously was much more interested in self-destructive men because he was himself a self-destructive man. And so, like, Contempt is totally about that. Pierre Le Fou, especially. I mean, like, the ending is literally...
Yeah.
You couldn't find a more literal depiction of self-destruction than the ending of Pierre Le Fou. But even, like, Breathless is kind of that, where it's this guy, like, putting himself in a dangerous position, just kind of keeping himself there for a sort of, like, ambiguous reason. And then Every Man for Himself, which is really, like... Godard laying out his pure destructive id on screen.
I hadn't thought of any of those at the time, but yeah, Pierre Le Fou especially. Yeah, I wanted to go back to something that you had said about Charlize Theron in Young Adult as being on a mission. So the two movies that immediately came to mind when you suggested this, I already mentioned Leaving Las Vegas, because it's like, it is his stated goal.
Sure.
In the movie, to drink himself to death. The other one that came to mind was a movie I only saw somewhat recently when we did our James Caan profile, The Gambler.
That was on my list too.
Yeah, that feel, and I guess technically the remake counts as well with Mark Wahlberg, but James Caan does just seem to be like, I think there's like a, he's like a self-hating rich kid, so like,
yeah,
he wants to see how far the safety net of privilege will extend. You mentioned at the top like the idea of like people trying to help these people, and then yeah, like Paul Sorvino is like the nice bookie
in the movie.
Is like, he's trying to help him, and he keeps fucking up. The movie that Uncut Gems is a movie that has a very similar structure in that way about gambling and the gambler, but I don't know that, I don't think that, is it Howie or whatever in Uncut Gems? I don't think he has that same self-hatred.
To a degree. I mean, there's that kind of breakdown scene right before he starts making the big bet where he's just like crying before Julia Fox and going like, I'm so fucked up. I think he has like a certain love of his own self-loathing, but I think that's part of his own narcissism. I mean, I think a lot of these gambling dramas kind of toy with both ends, where it's like, again, maybe they're more open to the possibility of self-destruction, but that's not their mission. Their mission is the high. And like, yeah, you see that in Uncut Gems. I think that's even verbally stated in Jacques Demy's Bay of Angels, where they're kind of bouncing between these like high-end glitzy suites, and then like the lowest of the low motel rooms, depending on their fortunes. And Jean Moreau's character is like, yeah, this is what I'm after, is like both ends of it. This is why I'm out here. And also like Robert Altman's California Split too, which is, I think, like the closest film to really capturing the true high of gambling, partially because it's one of the few gambling dramas that kind of ends on a high. But there's even an element of that where like the characters are open to the idea that this could destroy their lives, but it's not really what they're after.
Kind of like Mississippi Grind in that way.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Mississippi Grind is like an unofficial remake of California Split, but yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw them in the reverse order, but
they're both really good films. It's just like, I had already seen California Split before Mississippi Grind, and I was a little bit like, come on guys, I know not a lot of people have seen it, but you can't be this direct about it.
But one thing that Mississippi Grind has that California Split doesn't have is a beautiful shot of the St. Louis skyline from the river.
Sure, which every movie needs.
I forgot that was Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck who did that, because they also did Half Nelson, which
I've still never seen.
That's one of those movies that felt, it was like a big deal the year it came out.
I know, right?
And then it seems to have kind of faded from memory. I think now that we like know that Ryan Gosling can act, maybe that's why like people were still maybe kind of thinking of him as a pretty boy in 2006.
Oh, interesting.
I have to look at the,
well, because like the Notebook,
like a former Disney kid.
Yeah, but the Notebook had come out by then, which like was kind of a teen girl thing, which of course at the time was a little more denigrated than it might be today. But
that's what I'm saying. I mean, like He was in a couple of tiny, The Believer, which is not, I don't know, I don't think that's that great, but The Slaughter Rule, which I'm a big fan of. But then, yeah, he, like, Murder by Numbers and The Notebook, he was like a Hollywood, like, good-looking guy. And, yeah, I feel like Huff Nelson was kind of, for a lot of people, a realization he was interested in doing more.
Yeah, maybe I think because I didn't see that, or then the next year, Lars and the Real Girl, I wasn't kind of there on day one for the Ryan Gosling digest.
I said, I go back to 2002 in The Slaughter Rule, so I'm...
Well, more power to you, yeah. You got the cred.
Which also has a very tiny role from Amy Adams in the
song. Oh, really?
Yeah, she's just like one of the cheerleaders at the high school. So yeah, that's fun. Oh yeah, there was also Fracture in 2007, which I don't think I liked, but
they don't like those. Yeah, this is the first time even. Oh, I kind of vaguely remember this movie now. Yeah. Yeah, weirdly, I think the first movie I saw him in was Blue Valentine. So it's like,
okay,
well, I guess this is what Ryan Gosling does.
Right.
But the other director I thought of for this topic is Martin Scorsese, who from like his early short work consistently makes films about men punishing themselves for one thing or another. So you see that in Raging Bull, and I think I would argue even Last Temptation of Christ, or Bringing Out the Dead, and then like Shutter Island. Consistently get these.
Dead, yeah.
Yeah. I love that movie. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's like top five Scorsese for me.
I don't know if I put it that high. I put it off for a long time because I guess some people don't like it. Maybe I listened to those people.
Same, yeah. But it's so good.
It does feel like, I mean this in a good way. It does feel like Scorsese maybe had a bunch of unused ideas he hadn't been able to get into other movies and crammed them all into Bringing Out the Dead. I guess I mean that it feels kind of chaotic in that way.
Yeah, but I think that's working for the film kind of thing. It's a blast. It's definitely like a big cocaine movie, and like it was, I think, the last movie he made with Paul Schrader, and so they're very much like feeding off each other's predilections along the way, and you see that like all over the film. But it's such a thrill ride to watch, and I think it really crystallizes those themes in kind of the best way. Like Paul Schrader talked about this in some interview. I've recently become really obsessed with his film Light Sleeper, and he kind of lamented that the big criticism he got at the time was it just kind of devolves into gunplay towards the end, and he was like, he kind of recognized that they're right. He's like, this is something I just go to all the time as a way to end these movies. And Bringing Out the Dead has this like totally spiritual, like kind of like rapturous ending that still managed to like immolate the character without just like pulling out a bunch of guns. It's a great movie.
All right. What else?
What other loose themes? Well, we haven't really talked about like kind of the mid-century foreign film milieu of this sort of thing, but like La Dolce Vita is kind of playing in this realm of, I can't remember. Have you seen La Dolce Vita?
Yeah.
Okay. It's Tyler that hasn't. That's right.
I don't think I knew that.
But yeah, that's like very much a guy who's like top of the world and not actively seeking to destroy himself, but kind of like, kind of like the gambler thing of like daring the world to turn on him kind of thing. And it seems to gradually do so along the way. And then I was trying to figure out how to classify Ugetsu in this realm, because it's very much about these men who, I don't know, hook up with some ghosts, I guess. And it's like, it's kind of a film noir erotic thriller premise of like, they become so bewitched by these sexy ghosts that they are willing to just abandon their entire lives. But that kind of vaguely fits into this realm.
Before we get too far from La Dolce Vita, as I recall, you're not as big a fan of The Great Beauty as I was.
No.
Is that because is it lacking that part of... Because I mean, it's very much a La Dolce Vita pastiche, that movie. Is it because it's lacking that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember it that well. My rough recollection of it is that, yeah, it doesn't have the dimensions that La Dolce Vita does. It's kind of like they just stopped watching it at a certain point and we're like, good enough, let's take that as an inspiration. It kind of reminds me of what Roger Ebert always said about La Dolce Vita, where he's like, you know, when I was first coming up in the film criticism world, I deeply wanted to be Marcello Mastroianni's character. And at a certain point, I found myself being him. And now I look back on it and pity him, kind of thing. And it seems like they never got past that first stage with the right. Great Beauty.
Yeah, I can see that. I still like the movie, but I can see that.
Yeah.
I had another one about a drunk, and now I forgot. Damn.
That's all right. Then like going a little further back in the foreign film realm, Joseph von Sternberg's The Blue Angel, what's his guts, the Nazi sympathizing actor who we still love regardless.
Eric von Stroheim.
No,
I don't know. I've never seen the movie, so I don't know.
Oh man, it's so good.
I have a Blu-ray of it. I've just never watched it.
It's the only major famous German actor from the freaking 30s, but I can't think of his name. But he just like ruins his life over Marlene Dietrich, which like, you know, hashtag relatable and all, but is a really potent portrait of a respectable professor who kind of like takes up with this showgirl. It's kind of the classic narrative, but done about as well as it's ever been done, of just like destroying his life in order to chase this woman who will never truly love him.
Okay, the drunk that I thought of was also another Paul Schrader movie, Affliction.
Still need to see it.
Yeah, it's good. And then just scrolling through other people's lists, found a couple more women on here. Rachel Getting Married, not Rachel.
Yeah.
But either way. And then also, I know you're a fan, as am I, Crazy Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought of a couple of Kirsten Dunst films in here. That was one of them. Woodshock, my beloved, much underrated Woodshock is among them. And then obviously Melancholia is like, yeah, that's definitely a realm where you could be like, is it mental illness? Is it self-destruction? But I think by the end of the film, there's like, why not destroy everything kind of thing?
Crazy Beautiful, which is not a movie that I feel like people talk about a lot, but
unfairly, it's so good.
But that again belongs in that subgenre with The Gambler, of like kind of self-hating rich person, that she's
totally.
The spoiled rich girl, and like there's this like malaise, this existential malaise among like rich characters sometimes, where they're like, I have everything that I could ever want, but I don't want any of it.
Yeah, big time. And like it kind of, I mean, The Virgin Suicide had already come out by that point, but she's not as much kind of at the center of that film as she is in Crazy Beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I think Crazy Beautiful really set the template for like that aspect of Kirsten Dunst that she's now explored in so many films. Yeah, that was a film I was really glad I finally got around to, because like it's among many of like, I saw the trailer a bunch when I was, you know, 14 or something, and I was like super turned on by it, and I was like, that means it can't be good, but it's actually a really good movie.
Yeah. This will be a taste for people who might be thinking about joining the Patreon, patreon.com/battleshipretention. Scott and I, once a month on the Patreon, we do an episode we just call simply a fun game, where we name movies and name movies at random and share our memories of seeing them. So I did a sort of double feature, two different theaters. These weren't playing at the same theater.
Okay.
Where I saw Sexy Beast and Crazy Beautiful the same day.
Nice.
And two things I remember is, in between Sexy Beast and Crazy Beautiful, I decided I needed to eat lunch, and I went through a drive-thru at Taco Bell, and I flew too close to the sun on wings of melted cheese, because I thought like that I could get a nachos bel grande and eat it off my lap while driving to the movie theater. And it got all over the car. But I cleaned it up so much as I could, and I went in to see Crazy Beautiful. And I was there a little bit early, so I was waiting for them to finish cleaning for the previous screening. So I was waiting to go in. And a friend of mine walked up with her boyfriend, and she saw me, and she was like, oh, are you waiting for Kelly? Which was like the girl I was dating at the time. And I was like, no, I'm just here alone. And she was like, really? She was like shocked and like felt sad for me or something.
Sure.
I was like going to see Crazy Beautiful alone at like, I don't know, 4, 5 p.m. like a rush hour show. Do you have rush hour shows when you grew up? Was that a
No,
thing?
This is a new term to me.
Yeah, I found that when I left St. Louis, that the idea of a rush hour show is not universal, but that was, it's like a 5 o'clock screening of a movie.
I like that term because actually that's something that Julie and I do a lot nowadays because she gets off around 5 and the AMC Grove is very near her workplace. And so they often have like a showtime in like the 4:45, 5:15 range. And so we'll often hit up those.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another one that just came up on a list. Like, if someone is suicidal the same as self-destructive? Because Taste of Cherry is on this list.
And,
like, I mean, that's about a guy who very much wants to commit suicide, but I don't know if that's the same as self-destruction.
Yeah, I think that's another case by case thing, like with addiction or mental health.
Yeah.
Where I feel so this is actually a more like broadly thematic question, but I think to me self-destructive is like putting yourself up against the elements where like you're trying to destroy yourself or open to destroying yourself but not making the final decision. And that destructiveness might not even be death. It might just be like destitution, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah.
On the like death realm, the one film that came up when I was kind of Googling around for this was In Bruges, where it kind of does feel, and eventually turns to Colin Farrell, like trying to kill himself because of this thing he's done. Even though it's in the realm of this like comedic crime caper kind of thing.
I've still never seen that
one. Oh man.
I know that's the one that what's that? That's Martin McDonagh.
Yeah.
I don't really like him. And I think it's because I haven't
seen
that.
That's probably why.
Whereas I like John Michael McDonagh, although I never saw War on Everyone. I never saw that one.
When did this, is this a recent movie?
No, this is like 3 movies ago. It was like after Calvary.
Missed it. War on Everyone.
2016. Yeah, people say it's bad. So I don't know, but maybe I'll like it because people also said the Forgiven from 2021 was bad, but that's my kind of movie.
It does have one of those like awful taglines that you're like, this movie can't be good, where it's just
which one?
Bad cop, worse cop.
Oh, The War on Everyone?
Yeah.
We did a whole that episode on completionism. Maybe I should see War on Everyone just because I've seen everything else he's directed.
I mean, it's got a good cast. You got I'm kind of iffy on Alexander Skarsgård, but it's got Michael Pena, it's got Tessa Thompson, Caleb Landry Jones.
Yeah. But yeah, interesting. I guess like The Forgiven could kind of, I guess that's kind of a spoiler, but you were talking about In Bruges and the idea of a character. I haven't seen the movie, but I know what he does and what he like.
Yeah, yeah.
And so The Forgiven has kind of a similar thing that Ralph Fiennes' character, rich guy, accidentally runs over a poor kid and spends the entire movie trying to get away with it. And then I guess minor spoiler kind of like gives in and accepts his punishment. I don't mean legal punishment. He accepts retribution, which would be kind of like a self-destructive thing. I don't know. I like
the movie. I can see it.
What else do you have more on your list?
Yeah, I got a few. Well, it's worth mentioning The Shining. Of course, is about like Jack Nicholson really just giving into self-destructive ends. There are a couple that I thought of that I don't think would ordinarily be considered on this, and feel free to push back if you disagree, but I think there's an element of there in that in here, and like His Girl Friday is one of them, where like Rosalind Russell is given every opportunity to get out of the journalism game and get away from her terrible editor, Cary Grant, and get out of this life, but continually goes back into it and keeps kind of eating away at her. And you get the sense at the end that it's she made the wrong decision, even though it's like supposed to be a happy ending. I just think that's a much more nuanced film than it's kind of presented to be. And what was the other one along those lines? I guess different tonal end, but I think the ending of The Thing is really about two self-destructive people. Like that ending doesn't work unless Kurt Russell and Keith David are so distrusting of each other that they are willing to die over it.
You know, I mean, that, when I was Googling this, I saw at least one person mentioned The Thing on some thread, and I didn't.
Good for
I
them.
Didn't fully buy it at the time, but I see what you're saying.
A recent fave of mine, the Ben Affleck film The Way Back, about his alcoholism. Again, that's one of those things that kind of threads the line between addiction and self-destruction, but I think there's enough opportunities there for him to kind of pull out that it's kind of about a guy punishing himself for a lot of mistakes he's made. And similarly, Affleck Train, but Manchester by the Sea is definitely about a guy punishing himself for mistakes he's made. And then, like, so as I was thinking about alcoholism, naturally Hong Sang-soo came to mind, but I, for the most part, I wouldn't call his character self-destructive, but I definitely would for On the Beach at Night Alone.
Okay.
You see where I'm coming from? Where she's you get multiple scenes of her, like, really acting out and really trying to, like, make a show of how far she's fallen kind of thing. Let's see, what else? Similarly for alcoholism, we talked, I think on a recent Patreon, maybe, about Colossal, the Anne Hathaway film. But that's like self-destruction brought large onto the kaiju realm. And then my beloved Angelina Jolie's By the Sea is really about her trying to kind of do her and her husband in the course of their like fabulous getaway. I always want to say Criterion Anointed for films that I like saw before Criterion put them out. I think you have had similar impulses of like, no, I was cool. I saw this before Criterion acknowledged it. But a great movie, Smithereens, this is like an early 80s independent film, is very much about, and that's an interesting case study. And like, is this woman being pushed to the margin by society, or is she pushing herself there? But also just a really funny film.
Susan Seidelman, is that right? Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I'm I love Desperately Seeking Susan.
Yeah, of course.
I'm trying to think of more, but I keep like, this is a movie podcast, but there are so many TV, like so much of the like golden age, like prestige, difficult man dramas, like, you know, Mad Men for sure.
Of course.
And then BoJack Horseman, which is a show that is in a way, a response to those shows, is obviously also about that.
Or Breaking Bad for that matter.
Yeah.
All of those are kind of interesting case studies in like kind of the line we've been talking about, because like, well, more directly, Mad Men and BoJack deal with addiction, but you would never consider those characters' self-destruction as extensions of their addiction. Do you think that's maybe because of just their long-form storytelling that you see like maybe periods of them like getting clean or trying to get clean and then falling back into it?
I don't know if it's about, I just think the, in that case, Matthew Weiner and Raphael Bob Waxberg, whatever his name is, that just wasn't the story they were telling. Don't think they were interested in telling addiction stories.
Oh, for sure. But I guess I'm saying, like, I think for a lot of the movies we've been talking about that toe this line, I don't think that addiction was primarily the topic of those movies either.
Okay.
But for some reason, we feel a little more caught up in between them, and maybe it's just because we don't have the time to see those characters go through cycles, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. And those cycles can be heartbreaking.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Let's see if there's other stuff. One that I wanted to call is another one that's like, I don't know if you normally think of this as such, but I think would count, is The Red Shoes. Which is, you know, about people so invested in their jobs that they turn away the chance to not be destroyed by them.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and that gets back to dovetails with Margot Robbie in Babylon and
oh, big time,
and just parts of Damien Chazelle's whole thing, which is people dedicating themselves to their whatever their passion is, you know, at the expense of everything else.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if Damien Chazelle ever makes a movie about something else, right? Because like, I really like his work, and like, I'll keep following him wherever. But like, he can't just have the one theme all the time, can he?
I say go for it.
Okay,
steering. I say he's committed at this point. Just yeah, keep making that, telling that story.
Hey, fair enough.
Yeah.
And then I think that kind of gets through the main chunk of my list.
Yeah. Well, this is fun. This is these are my kind of movies.
Yeah, big time.
So I have some to see now that I hadn't seen. I hope you listeners feel the same. Let us know what you think we should have talked about on this episode. You can find us at battleshippretension.com. You can email me at david@battleshippretension.com. Email Tyler at tyler@battleshippretension.com. Check out the his GoFundMe. It's pinned to the top of the homepage at battleshippretension.com. I'm also on Twitter and Blue Sky at Davey Pretension. I'm on Letterboxd at David Bax. My other podcast is called The One Where I Met Your Mother. That's me, Scott. Where do you want people to look for you?
Yeah, Twitter and Blue Sky at Rail of Tomorrow. I'll have my Twitter unlocked for the next few weeks as we gear up towards TCM Fest, and have reviews on the website for, as with this recording, Lousy Carter is already up. And shortly thereafter this posting, I'll have a review up for The Beast, the new Bertrand Pinello, right? That's his name?
I think that's
right. Film that I just saw today, and which is so, so, so extraordinary.
Oh, good. All right. Well, other than that, thank you for listening.
And we'll get you next time.
Bye.